and welcome to Winning Slowly, taking the long view on technology, religion, ethics, and art.
I'm Stephen Carradini.
And I'm Chris Kreicho.
And today we're going to talk about a new social network named Elo.
Thus the funky opening.
Thus the punky opening, which I made Chris do because I was not about to subject you to that.
I, on the other hand, was perfectly happy to subject you to it.
There you go. So we're going to talk about Elo. We're interested in it because we talk a lot about social media on Winning Slowly, not particularly because we have a more than average interest in social media, but because right now social media is a huge issue in tech. And that's what we do here. We do tech. So we are interested in Elo. We're also interested in Elo because we're interested in business models. And we've had several episodes about business models. This time around, Elo is trying to do something slightly different in not doing an ad-supported model. But there are some issues with how they've been doing their startup funding, or maybe they aren't issues, or maybe you think they issues and they aren't, or they aren't issues and they think they are. That's kind of the controversy.
So Elo is a few months old. I'd started seeing mentions of it back probably midsummer. I think they launched in May or June quietly, and they've been invite only. They're still invite only, but they kind of hit a critical mass recently where enough people had been invited and were using their invitations that they started exploding into the news a whole bunch and started getting a lot more press, started becoming more available because the chances that, especially if you run in tech circles, the chances that you knew someone who had invites to give started going up exponentially. When you log in, you have 5 invites you can send to people. Once you reach a certain number of people, that, you know, that has the opportunity to grow very rapidly. Now, Elo's basic premise is we'll let you do kind of multimedia micro-ish blogging. So Twitter's your standard microblog. You get 144 characters and that's it. Other entrants into this sphere have not done particularly well in the long term. Our beloved app.net had a year and a half run or so. It's still running, but I can tell you it's getting quieter over there. And Twitter's still going strong. Elo lets you write much longer posts, whereas app.net bumped it up from 144 to 256. I haven't actually found the character limit on Elo yet. It seems that it will let you just type up long, lengthy, ongoing, rambly blog posts if you so desire.
And it
also is heavily oriented on sharing non-text media. It's a lot of the early adopters have been artists, and so there's a lot of visual art on there.
Right. And one of the other interesting things about it is that they use Markdown when you're doing your blog posts. Mm-hmm. So it's set up to say, hey, you can write as long as you want in the style that you want. So it kind of caters towards text producers, but Elo itself promotes mostly visual arts with its official
things its official account shares and so
yes.
on.
So it's an interesting sort of place. The UI is very minimalistic, almost to the point of being confusing. The user experience is not necessarily intuitive.
It's still a beta. And they say so, to be fair. Yeah, but it's definitely still a beta.
It's definitely something in progress. They're definitely still working on it. There's definitely, like Chris said, a skew towards visual content, and I'm not generally a visual content creator, so even though I'm on Elo, I haven't found a community necessarily yet other than people that I already would have been hanging out with and talking with on the internet. I haven't really found anyone new or a conversation to join that really fits what I do, which is, you know, music media. And this was a problem with G Plus as well. I tried to do G Plus, tried to do the music thing, just nobody there was doing that. So it was, for me, Elo has been just another social media thing so far. Mm-hmm. Other than, we really like the business model. We really like the idea that it's not ad supported.
Right. Well, rather, we like what they're denying in their business model. We don't know what their actual business model will be yet,
right?
Because all they've told us so far is we will not be ad-supported, and we're going to sell you things.
Which is difficult, because they haven't started selling those things yet, so we don't know what they are. And to start up, you generally need money. Generally, you can bootstrap it from nothing without any loans and just using all your spare time. Plenty of companies have done this. And it seemed at the beginning that this is what Elo had done. There's seven creators of Elo, so it seems like maybe they had distributed the work across all of them and they all just did it in their spare time and made it up and away we go. Well, that's not exactly true. Errol Balkin pointed out that Fresh Tracks Capital, which is a venture capital fund, had given them $435,000 in venture capital. Now, $435,000 is
not
very little. Yeah, it's very little in the world of venture capital. It's also, Fresh Tracks is not based in Silicon Valley. Neither is Elo. Elo is not in Silicon Valley. So right off the bat, there are several aspects of this venture capital situation that are, you know, different. However, they just didn't disclose that at any point on Elo or anywhere. The only place that it was disclosed was on Fresh Tracks Capital, where they said, this is what we're doing.
We're investing in these guys.
And so, naturally, there were some people who were disappointed and angry. The blog post that we'll link starts out with the phrase, I'm disappointed. So, there's some level of concern that any amount of contact with venture capital sullies the waters. So as soon as you have venture capital, that means you have exits. As soon as you have exits, you don't have a pure experience. That's essentially the argument of this blog post.
Right. Exits, for some of our listeners who may not spend all their time reading about economics of tech capitalism.
What?
Because Stephen and I are nerds.
We have those? We have real people listeners?
There are a few sometimes. The exit, quote unquote, is where the early investors and honestly a lot of times the founders, when the company starts becoming sufficiently large and or profitable, a lot of times it's large or profitable.
Right.
It makes a sale to some yet larger company. The prototypical example of this being Instagram, which got very large and then got bought by Facebook. They're kind of one of the notable starts to the current large trend of this happening. And then the early investors...
It had been
happening
before that, but Instagram is definitely a high watermark.
Yeah, they started the round of people getting bought for billion-plus dollars.
I can hang with that.
The early investors and sometimes the founders then get to exit, which is they sell their stock when that happens, and they walk away with lots and lots and lots and lots of money. This is why a lot of venture capital works the way it does. They say, we'll give you this money on the premise that you're going to get very large and get bought by someone much larger for a very large sum of money, and we will make lots and lots of money and leave.
Right.
I should say, this is how venture capital in Silicon Valley tends to work. There are people who do venture capital, who do, quote, angel investing to help companies make big products, good products, on the principle that there will be some return, not on the principle that there would be enormous heaps and gobs of money return. Silicon Valley's venture capital culture is distinctive.
Yeah, that's a good word for it, distinctive.
And the venture capital firm here does seem to be more the, we want to see this become profitable, but we're not in this for a huge exit. They've said as much, and they've said that their goals for the social network, for it being ad-free all along, align with the founders. And that's reassuring in some ways. Less reassuring, though, is the reality that, as a number of commentators have pointed out, having that venture capital money in there does put some pressure on the founders to do certain things in certain ways.
Yeah, they got to get that money back somehow.
Right.
That's just a reality of the situation. That's not a gift.
Yeah. Me, so, if I were doing a startup, I'd say you can generously give to me as much money as you want. Just don't necessarily expect any of it back, which right. means I would probably not be a successful startup recruiter of money. But
I don't know. I would give you money. It would be a donation on Kickstarter or something.
But... right.
And this is, again, why some people eschew venture capital and do the Kickstarter route or do the bootstrap it from the ground up in your spare times, because giving, whether it's money aspect or giving some amount of stock or stake, or there's a lot of ways that this goes, but giving up some part of your company so that you can build a bigger company is, you know, the basic idea of venture capital, large and small. And people try to go outside of that system, which we've talked about that several times. And so the basic premise here is that Elo is saying, hey, our venture capital is real small, so we're not actually going to fall into the traps of venture capitalism. And other people are saying venture capitalism equals venture capitalism, regardless right. of size.
Right.
And so it's an interesting question because, you know, $435,000, not a whole lot of money in terms of venture capital.
No, and to especially, pay seven people, it doesn't actually go very far.
Yeah, especially if that's the only venture capital that they take on.
Right.
Now, they may have to take on more, perhaps from this company, perhaps from other companies in other rounds of funding. They may not. We don't right. know yet. They haven't been super forthcoming with their plan financially or their plan for venture capital, other than saying, don't worry about it, guys. We've got this.
You know, that I think is where the cause for legitimate concern about their funding structure does come up. You know, when your business model essentially is asking people to trust you that you're not going to sell their data, et cetera, and really that's your differentiator at this point. Otherwise, they kind of look like Tumblr with a more minimalistic aspect and more integrated replies from, you know, the Twitter kind of world.
Right.
One of the commentators on Accidental Tech podcast, which just covered this, one of them pointed out that this is kind of a interface-wise, it's split down the middle between Twitter and Tumblr, and that's a pretty good description. But when you're essentially asking people to say, look, we're going to go with you because of your differentiator, which is your business model and your willingness not to go the advertising route, well, being very open about your financial approach is going to engender a lot more trust. You immediately start eroding people's trust in you when you say, look, we're doing this the right way. We're not going to go the advertiser direction. And then you conveniently leave out the fact that you do have venture capital investment. You know, if you just say, we've got venture capital, it's a small amount from this investing firm over here that agrees with us that this is a better way of doing things and agrees with us that advertiser-driven social media is terrible, that actually gives you more cachet right out the front. But
right.
they haven't done that. And so it made them look bad. It put them on the back, kind of rocked them back on their heels, and they had to come out with a defensive, no, really, you don't have to worry about it. You know, we've talked a lot before about messaging and how the ways you communicate make a big difference. We talked about this, interestingly, in a related segment when we were talking about Twitter and also Taylor Swift.
So it's kind of a bummer that their business model is, trust us, we're good dudes over here. And then their first major crisis point is, oh, you did something untrustworthy. That's not very good for that whole
right.
trust us thing. So that's not necessarily because they thought that this was a big, hairy deal. One of the responses that the Elo team had was, why would we lead with that? Well, you know, that's a good point, I suppose. You don't, if you're trying to place yourself as the alternative, you don't want to say, hey, look, we're the ad alternative with venture capital. So I understand that. But at the same time, I also think that this is a failure of how they think about the overall ways that people react to news. Mm-hmm. So this is some amount of backlash on venture capital. Sure, fine. But I think this is also the way that people react to things they didn't know, which is a much larger, you know, sociological, psychological, structural communications sort of problem. There's things you've said that encompass the entirety of what you want people to know, then people will believe that that's the entirety of things that you need to know.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you just leave things out and those come to light later, then it's hard for people to believe in the future that that is the reality of you saying everything that people need to know.
Right. People feel like you're trying to deceive them via omission.
Yeah. And so we're quickly swinging over into an ethics episode over here, which is
shocking.
Well, that's not where I expected this to go. I thought we were going to bash on some VC some more. But there's really a tension there between how do we communicate things that are important to us and how do we communicate things that are important to our audience when those things might not be the same thing.
Right.
And so how do you mitigate the gap there between the ways that we want to represent ourselves and the ways that people want to know and the things that people want to know about this information.
Right. I was having a conversation on Ello, interestingly, with an acquaintance slash friend I made on app.net about Google and Apple, totally unrelated in a lot of ways. But he made the salient point that one of the lessons to take away from how we've seen the various iOS and Android platforms develop is, as creators, you always need to be considering the audience, considering the end user, et cetera. And this is, you know, this kind of runs up against the person going it alone for their own reasons, auteur model of the arts, but the mm-hmm. same thing for design, et cetera. There's a necessity of considering your audience, considering the person who will be using your product, et cetera, and doing that in a way that shows considerable respect for them, that shows that their needs are important and not just your interests,
yep.
and that asks how this thing that you think is interesting and therefore is certainly genuinely interesting to at least some other group of people, figuring out how to communicate that and how to present that and then how to execute on it in a way that respects your audience, respects your would-be users. So when you're creating an album, you know, I'm thinking here about one of our early episodes where we talked about making the swing from one style to another or mm-hmm. changing it up when you create a new album.
Yep.
There's a necessity of thinking about how that's going to communicate to your audience. There's a necessity of thinking about how your audience is going to understand that. And if nothing else, even if you go ahead and go full on genre shift, it's important to do that in a way that communicates that you still respect your audience, that you right. still appreciate your audience.
Right.
And in Ello's case here, it was important for them to say, here are our goals, and here are the ways in which we're going about trying to accomplish those goals. We're working out a business model of things that we can sell in one-off and ongoing relationship kinds of ways with you. And we've taken a little venture capital so we can have a little extra time to make a good business model. And right there, you've done that. You've respected your audience. You've treated them as intelligent. You've treated them as people who, by dint of the fact that they're interested in an ad-free network, already have certain expectations and concerns.
Right.
You know, maybe audience in the long awareness. Run, yeah, maybe in the long run, you end up picking up a much broader audience. That is, of course, your goal. But your first wave of adopters is certainly going to be composed of people who, like you, share concerns about the potentially corrupting influence of certain kinds of revenue streams.
Yep.
And one of those potentially corrupting revenue streams is bad venture capital. And so clearing the ground first is just a way of respecting your users and respecting your audience.
Right. I think there's also a level where it's one step removed to associate venture capital with ads.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a huge step,
right.
but it is a step. And so perhaps they just didn't think that people would make that sort of leap. I don't know. But
right.
that's still a kind of fundamental misunderstanding of who the early adopters were,
mm-hmm.
which is potentially not who they thought they were going to get, because like they stated at their beginning, they were a group of artists and programmers, not, you know, tech people and programmers or
right.
environmentalists or programmers. These are artists who expected that it was going to be an art sharing space to some degree. And they still promote art a lot on their official channels. So to some degree, they still feel that that's one of the main core competencies. I was just taught to say that word wrong. I was taught to say the word wrong. I don't know why. They thought that was one of their main competencies. But yeah, I mean, Elo might not be wrong. There might be a whole bunch of artists going on there. But it's an interesting gap to try to talk about. I mean, I went to various classes throughout my graduate career that are all about how content creators, whether they be official or unofficial, can reach their audience and know their audience better. So I'm always interested in how audience understand the things that content creators or platform creators or anybody is pushing out into the world. So this is not a problem that Elo is alone in. This is a huge communications issue. But
right.
And to be fair, Elo has responded to these concerns without trying to hide them. There is a bit of a contentious feel because there is a bit of a contentious feel to the blog that
right.
uncovered is the wrong word, but kind of uncovered the
right,
venture capital.
Highlighted. Yeah.
So, you know, contention breed contention. So that makes sense.
Right. When a user writes a big post on Elo saying, don't use Elo.
Right.
In That's... pretty hostile terms. And it's clear that a lot of it is for ideological reasons that are much broader merely than the venture capital. There's also some ideological affirmation of open source and so on that
right.
is an undercurrent there.
Right.
It's natural for the company to feel defensive and say, we're not trying to hide this. It just wasn't our lead. And why are you getting all jumpy about these things?
Right, right. So there is some good that Elo has done in responding to these pretty difficult, hostile attacks part, that they haven't just said, oh yeah, that guy, whatever, which we know plenty right. of tech companies that do that.
What we're really curious with in Elo in the long term is whether they do indeed come up with a sustainable business model, because it's really hard. We saw that with app.net, which got a number of things wrong in terms of its business model, as evidenced by the fact, and business model here, I'm speaking very broadly, not just in the sense of what do people pay for what services, but how does that relate to marketing and how do you position yourself versus potential competitors, and how do you differentiate yourself against those competitors, and how do you make yourself look, you know, all of those things are part of your quote business model unquote. And we saw it with Editorially, which we both really liked in principle. And
I knew you were going to have to talk about that.
I know. They never found a sustainable business model, and they were looking for one, and they wanted to have people pay for services, and they said right out the door, we're not going to do advertising. And it's kind of familiar in the sense that Elo right out the door is saying, we're going to do something different. We're not going to do advertising. I think Editorially had some venture capital. You have to, or another source of investment, or be independently wealthy, or be young and be able to survive on
ramen noodles.
Right. But yeah, Editorially made the same kind of move, and they were never able to find a working business model. And that was really sad.
Yeah.
You know, we could see the same thing happen with Elo. It could be that this is a really neat idea, but it just won't work.
Yeah.
At the same time, I think it is a neat idea, and I think it is an important idea, and I fundamentally disagree with another article that I saw that assumed that this kind of funding model is inherently consumer hostile. Ben Thompson usually hits it on the nose when he's doing business analysis, but I think he's just flat wrong. I don't think that a social network has to be advertising funded to be consumer friendly. In fact, quite the opposite. I think a social network that thinks very carefully about its business model and works really hard to align its incentives with what's good for its consumers could be really successful while eschewing advertising. But it's going to be hard because you need traction. You need a sufficient number of people who are willing to pay a certain amount for at least some of those services. You have to, in doing that, make sure that you align what your payment scheme is with what actually benefits your users, because otherwise you'll end up broken.
Here's a question. So one of the concerns that you noted was the lack of open source.
Mm-hmm.
What if there was a sort of modified open source where you could, for a fee, have access to the open sourceness of it? So it's not like totally open source just out there on the internet, but for money, you as a person or as a corporation could use the open source, sort of like APIs, but mm-hmm. bigger, you know?
Yeah, I think you would certainly have to rebrand it, because open source means so many things to people that really
aren't. Yeah, I'm not saying that it should be open source. I'm just saying there's no word for this thing that I'm thinking of.
Right. I think that could in theory work, especially if you basically said, we'll let you run your own private version of this. You know, if you basically said you can have your own company, LO, that might work.
But they would have to be all interconnected.
Right.
To actually have it be a social network.
Right. And so.
And not just be another Slack.
Yeah. The challenge for that and sort of the problem for that is that people have tried it. Now, you can talk about why these other things haven't caught on. There was, I guess it was Tent Is, and now it's Cupcake.io, which kind of hilarious names if you ask me. And that might be part of the reason they haven't caught on.
There you go.
But. Yeah, you know, we're back to marketing as a broad term again there.
Yeah. But I think there's also something to be said for the time is right, that zeitgeist chaotic moment.
Right.
And I think that we're reaching that point where I'm tired of Facebook. I do it because that's where all the people are, but
yeah.
If there were all the people were somewhere else, I would probably go there.
Right. And the trick is always getting enough of the normals, quote unquote. You know, the people who all the people who don't follow tech news and think about federated protocols and so on, getting all of those people to move, or enough of them that it's viable, at least your crowd, you know, even if that's just that really you just care about getting the musicians to move and you can drop pictures on Facebook for your mom.
Yeah.
Getting your musicians to move is hard.
Yeah, it's true.
And that's where those other platforms have run into problems. That's where app.net ran into problems. I suspect from what I've heard that may be where Elo runs into problems in the long run, is people will try it out, but unless there's something that really makes it a compelling alternative just to using Twitter and Tumblr as the individual things that they are, people will just keep using Twitter and Tumblr. And the moment may be right, I agree, but capitalizing on that moment remains very difficult.
Venture capitalizing on that moment?
I see what you did there.
So we're really interested in Elo, and we're really excited that it exists, and we're looking forward to seeing how it continues to exist, and we hope that they are able to use their non-ad supported model, whatever it is, to grow, thrive, and make me not have to see ads on Facebook or use Facebook. This has been episode 1.13 of Winning Slowly. All of our content is licensed under a Creative Commons attributes license. So you can chop it up, remix it, and do whatever you'd like with
you
it. Just don't say you made it the original time.
You can, of course, follow us on your favorite social media. That includes, of course, Twitter, app.net, Facebook, and Elo. I gave up on Google Plus a long time ago. Sorry.
Yeah. We'd also like to thank Falcon Arrow for the use of their song at the beginning. Check them out. Don't use their stuff without their permission.
And you can subscribe in your favorite podcast app or iTunes. And we've got a quiz for you, listeners. If we ran funding, Indiegogo or Kickstarter or some such, to get us both awesome microphones so that we sounded more awesome for you.
Not would venture you capital, though. Just
not venture
clear.
Capital. Crowd capital. would you go for that? Let us know on those favorite social media sites of yours. Until next time, I've been Chris Kreicho.
And I am and will be Stephen Carradini. Thanks for listening. You'll just have to scrub the weird pauses.